Hey from New Jersey, it's the SNL Nerds, the show where two comics from New Jersey nerd out about Saturday Night Live. I'm your co-host, John Trumbull.
And I'm your co-host, Darren Patterson.
Darren, here we are again.
Here we are again, living this Groundhog's Day type existence.
Yes.
It looked fun in the movie. In real life, not so much.
Yeah. Considerably less ice sculptures for Andy McDowell.
Yes.
Than the real life version.
Absolutely. It's really some kind of something.
Yep. But we're back. We're still recording at home. We're recording another SNL movie. This week we're talking about the movie Killing Gunther, which was written, directed by, and starring Taron Killam.
That's right. Movie came out. It came out first on video on demand on September 22nd, 2017, and had a limited release in the theaters a month later. I kind of remember this movie coming out, but not really. Because, like, this kind of came out on the heels of Taron getting fired from SNL, like, which is, it was something that's always kind of been debated. And it really took me by surprise, too, way back in 2016. Because, I went back and looked at old SNL episodes with Taron in and where he was, like, the star. And, like, he was a solid SNL cast member, and
I enjoyed Taron on the show, and I was a bit of a fan of Taron Killam already, because I remember before he came on SNL, like maybe a year or so, he had a recurring role as a med student on Scrubs. He was like, I forget his exact character name, but he was like the overly huggy intern, and he would come on and he would just like hug. He had like no personal boundaries. And he fit well in the world of that show. And I think he did a few of his impressions on Scrubs. So it was like, oh yeah, he's a good fit for SNL. And I really liked him on the show, enjoyed him. He was on the show for 6 years. He talked a little about his departure for the show and how it was related to this movie. And we'll get into that a little later, I think.
Absolutely. Yeah. I guess he was one of those cast members that was never like a huge, you know, spotlight, big star, like, you know, like Kate McKinnon or Bill Hader. But like, he was a solid dude. He was doing some great impressions. He did a Brad Pitt impression that was pretty solid, you know. And
oh yeah, yeah, great, yeah. Brad Pitt.
Yeah, that sounded more erotic than I meant it to. But like,
well, you know, when you got Brad Pitt, it just automatically sounds erotic. The man is a golden god.
Oh my god, he must smell great. And, but yeah, like he did a great Matthew McConaughey impression. And those are two celebrities that no one does impressions of. So like when he was like the one to kind of start that off, I was like, oh, this guy's really good. And in every sketch he's in, he was like a solid dude. And one of your favorite characters he's done Jebediah Atkinson.
Oh, Jebediah Atkinson. So funny. One of my favorite recurring characters on the show. And I really miss seeing him periodically come on Weekend Update as that character. That was a character that I sincerely never got sick of, even though they could have easily driven it into the ground. I thought she was terrific.
Yeah. So,
my pronouns.
Oh, boy. But yeah. So, yeah, and I just thought he was a solid cast member. So when the news came out that they were letting him go after 6 years, even though he only had one more year to fulfill in his contract before his contract was up, it was really weird. Like I was like, wait, I tried to look into this a little bit more, trying to figure out exactly why he was let go, but like I couldn't find anything concrete except for, oh yeah, it was just time for a shakeup in the cast.
So what happened was, okay, I mean, when a cast member signed on to SNL, they automatically sign a 7-year contract with the show. So if they are a hit on the show, they can stay up to 7 years. I mean, that is like the minimum. So like if someone leaves after or before 7 years are up, it's generally not going to be their choice. you know, Lorne decides to shake up the show, or he lets somebody go for whatever reason. I mean, there's a multitude of reasons. And since we're talking about this a bit, I mean, Taryn has said, yeah, he doesn't really know. He never got the full story himself, which, I mean, that's got to be frustrating.
Yeah. I mean, him and Jay Farrow were both released at the same time. And yeah.
And I thought they were both, I mean, if they were not breakout guys, I thought they were certainly pillars of the show. I thought they were both solid repertory players. And it wasn't, those weren't departures where you were like, oh, yeah, I see. That was somebody who never really made their mark on the show. I mean, I think you could certainly argue Jay Farrow at least could have done a little more, been utilized a little better. But Taryn Killam, I mean, he was one of the reasons I was tuning into the show. And I found like a quote from Lorne Michaels. This is, they were both let go right before season 42. So just a few years ago. And Lorne Michaels said, I think they were great and they did wonderful work when they were with us. They served the show well and are two people I really care about. Change is the lifeblood of the show. It always has been. And you have to keep bringing new people in. Hopefully it's for the best. I'm not worried about either of them going on to success. And that's a pretty supportive, but also very vague statement.
Yeah. I mean, I agree with him that, you know, the cast does need to change every so often. You know, mm-hmm. it's the lifeblood. Like every few years, SNL has to kind of redefine itself. And, you know, that, you need like a new cast members and new writers and stuff like that. That's fine. Yeah. But the fact that they weren't able to finish out their contract when they only had a year left, that's the thing that seems kind of fishy to me. That's like, mm-hmm. I don't know. Like you could let them write it out and then switch it up. Like why so sudden?
It is weird. It is weird. And it just shows that, yeah, as solid as you think your footing might be, the rug can be pulled out from under you at any time. Taryn Killam, he had this to say. This was from an article on Screen Crush, but they might have been quoting from somewhere else. Taryn Killam said, I don't know the other side of it. You signed for 7 years, so I had one more year. I had sort of had it in my head that I would make this upcoming year my last year, but then heard they weren't going to pick up my contract. I was never given a reason why, really. I can assume until the cows come home. But I do know I'm directing this movie, Killing Gunther, which we're talking about in a little bit, and I'll have 2 months of post-production that would have bled into the SNL production schedule. So we kind of communicated that. And I think the way this story got kind of reduced or simplified in the media was that he was definitely let go because of the movie. And yeah, that's not so much the case. He wasn't told that outright. So it's right. Really just guesswork.
But it's all allegedly at this point. Allegedly it was because of the movie. Mm-hmm. Allegedly.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. So, so let's get into the movie, Killing Gunther. Gunther. There's something he was kind of working on for quite a bit. And, I don't know. We'll describe it from the opening to the end. So it begins with Argentina, and it's
Buenos Aires, Argentina.
It begins with a man sitting down having dinner in an empty restaurant, and then a man comes up to him, and it turns out to be Taryn Killam, who plays Blake, who's a hired
Blake
gun.
Cameron.
Yes, yeah. Who's a And a hired assassin. He's an assassin, and he basically was saying he shot the guy, he was his target, but he forgot the last thing that he was supposed to say that his boss has told him to say. Then he like had to reach his pocket and write that. Oh, he told me to. I knew I'd find you under a rock or something. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So it right off the bat, it establishes him and his character as this effective assassin, but also sort of bumbling. He's not as good as he thinks he is. And he's also, this whole movie is shot as a fake documentary in the style of like The Office or a mockumentary, like one of Christopher Guest's movies.
Or kind of like that French movie, Man Bites Dog. I've never seen it, but I heard of it.
Okay, I haven't seen that either. So
okay, I shouldn't have brought it up then.
I don't know, but okay, Man Bites Dog, also shot as a fake documentary. But they do it a little differently than a lot of those other things have, where the documentary crew actually plays a part in the movie. We find out pretty quickly that Blake is threatening this documentary crew to shoot everything that happens and cover this whole story, because Blake has it out for this big time assassin by the name of Gunther, who is very effective and yet very mysterious. The opening credits of the movie mostly show headlines and things about Gunther, about all these effective assassinations that he's pulled off, and yet no one knows what he looks like or where he lives or anything like that.
Yeah, he's like a Kaiser Sose type.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. A very, very mysterious character. And we also meet other members of the crew that Blake has gathered from the world of professional assassins. We've got Donald Pisnowski, who's trying to get the name Boom Boom to take off. And this character is played by Bobby Moynihan,
yes.
Karen's old SNL castmate. And he's a demolitions expert. So he blows people up. And his opening scene, he's like fishing in a, I guess not a lake. He's fishing in the ocean.
No, I think it's on like Lake Michigan or something, it said.
Okay. And the camera pans over to a yacht, and then the yacht blows up. And then we pan back to Bobby Moynihan. He had a little switch on his fishing pole to like set off his explosives.
Yeah, it's like, oh, this isn't a fishing rod. How about that? Boom, boom.
Yeah. And then we have who I would say is the female lead of the film. We have a character by the name of Sana Faruza, who's played by Hannah Simone from New Girl. She played, what was the model's name? I forget the character's name.
Cece. Ah, oh, right.
Yeah, she played Cece on New Girl. And she's the daughter of a famous assassin, and she's very effective in her own right. But she has this overprotective father who, of course, comes into play over the course of the movie.
Right, like basically her father was like a big-time deal assassin in his day. They called him the Nightmare. So now she kind of lives in his shadow. But whenever she takes out a guy, like her father is always there. And he's kind of like a stage mom at this point, where he's like, oh, that's my baby, you see that?
Yeah, that's a really good way to put it. Yeah, they have an interesting dynamic. And then next we meet Gabe Nels, who is a hacker called the Human Computer. And he's played by someone who's also very briefly an SNL cast member, Paul Pertan.
Right. Like, now, did you think for a minute that that guy was like Bo Burnham, like I did?
I did not recognize him as Paul Pertan. I didn't like he Paul was on the show so briefly, I didn't really fix on him. So when he popped up in this movie, I did not recognize him. And I didn't realize it was him until I started to do some research on this movie.
Yeah, no, same here. But when I first saw him, I was like, oh, is that Bo Burnham? And I was like, oh, wait,
you know, no. I can see that.
It's got that early Justin Bieber haircut, that bob.
Yeah, a little bit. And let's see, there's also a character by the name of Ashley, who's this older hitman who is Blake's mentor. And he's... Blake considers him his secret weapon in this venture where he's going to get Gunther. But he's got health problems and he has a heart attack and he lands into the hospital almost immediately.
Yeah, like very early in the movie, he just like, oh, he's had heart problems. He can't be part of our crew. Yeah, so basically, like Blake has assembled his crew to take out Gunther because Gunther is the best of the best and they want to be the best of the best, so they want to take him out.
Yeah. And let's see, we've got a few other characters. There's Izzat, who is known as Crusher, who is a character. He lost an arm in a suicide bomb attempt. He wasn't doing a suicide bomb, but he was caught up in another incident with a suicide bomb. So he lost an arm, so he has this artificial arm that gives him super strength. So he's almost like the Bionic Man or something like that.
Yeah, he's like, what you call it, a Winter Soldier.
Yeah. Yeah, there you go. That is a more current reference.
Yes, Bucky!
And then we've got Pak Young, who is an Asian assassin he has a personal grudge against Gunther because Gunther killed his snake. Pak Young, his trademark is he doesn't use guns because the sight of blood makes him ill. So his specialty is poison.
Right, and we see it throughout the movie. Like, whenever he sees any type of blood, like somebody could cut their finger, like he'll throw up a little bit.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, you see that a few times.
Yeah. A little bit of vomit. And then we got the Belakova twins, who are a brother and sister team. And the sister is played by Alison Tolman, who you might remember from the TV series Fargo.
Yeah, the first two seasons of Fargo are really good. Like, I highly recommend them if you haven't seen it.
Incredible stuff. Incredible stuff. Yeah. I think all of the TV series Fargo is on Amazon Prime, or at least it was last I saw.
Ooh. So check it out, people.
Worth checking out. Mm-hmm. And Chris Rock's going to be on the upcoming season, I believe.
Yes, I did see that. And Jason Schwartzman. So it's like, oh, that's an interesting casting.
So there you go. So there you go. Check that out. So we've got all these super assassins gathered together. They're like a Justice League of assassins. They're like the Avengers, except evil and killing and stuff.
Yes.
But they've got a plan. They want to lure Gunther out with a fake hit and then lure him. And if they can take out Gunther, that will really establish their name in the field of hitmanning or hit-personing.
Hitman.
I don't know. Assassinating.
Assassinating.
Assassin something. Yeah.
Sassafras.
Yeah.
All right. So, at one point, the entire crew gets together, and we see that also one of Blake's former partners, Max Pelaine, comes up saying, "Hey, guys, we heard that you're looking for Gunther. I actually know where he is," and he holds up like a little flash drive. And before he could say who Gunther is and what he looks like and where he is, we see that there's a sniper shoots him right in the head and shoots the flash drive too. And everybody freaks out like, oh my God, where did that come from? Came from the roof. They try to shoot him down. Young, because he only has poisons, tries to throw a vial of poison at him, and he's like, oh, did I get him?
Yeah. And Gunther, then he fires a rocket into the warehouse, and this is a moment where the movie very cleverly gets around its budget limitations. It you see like a rocket firing, and like right before it hits, the camera cuts off, and then the camera comes back on, and then we just see the damage. We see like little bits of flame around the warehouse, but we don't see any expensive explosions or anything like that. And we see Taron Killam's Blake character threatening the documentary crew. He's like, "Did you stop filming? Never stop filming. Never, never, ever stop filming."
Yeah.
And he's like, "You keep filming no matter what."
And that's the weird. I mean, the whole premise is you got to like suspend disbelief a little bit, because it's like, oh, this hitman wants a documentary crew to film him doing all these illegal things for prosperity. Yeah.
It really doesn't make any kind of sense if you think about it for more than 10 seconds, you know, and they kind of bring up the implausibility of it when you see Blake gathering these assassins, because the first few assassins, they see the camera crew and they freak out because they weren't warned about the camera crew, and they're like, "What are they doing here?" And that they nearly take out the camera crew themselves.
Yeah, like, oh, they're with us. It's like,
yeah,
you're recording all these illegal activities we're doing. That's smart.
Yeah, and then then somehow all the other highly competent assassins are like, oh, okay, well, that's okay then.
I'll just walk around with no mask, covering my face, with a gun in my hand, talking about all the killing I'm about to do. That's cool.
Yeah, it's really kind of odd, but, you know, you go with it.
Yeah.
And let's see. And then after this, we discover there's another character, and we discover that Blake has another motivation for going after Gunther. His ex, Lisa McCullough, who is also an ex-assassin. She is also the ex of Blake, and she is played by Taron's real-life wife, Colby Smulders, who you know from How I Met Your Mother.
Yes, and Maria Hill from the Avengers movies.
Yeah, and also, what is that series that she did with Keegan-Michael Key about, like, the college friends or the classmates?
Oh, yeah, that, I never saw it.
That thing.
That thing.
That thing with those people. Yeah, she was in that, too.
College things. College buddies.
Yeah.
College pals.
It's on the tip of my tongue, but I don't feel like looking it up right now. So you guys know what I mean.
I got it. Hold on. Looking up now. Do-do-do.
Okay.
Da-da-da. Well, I mean, she's on Stumptown now. And, okay. Yeah,
true.
Hold on. I thought I had it.
Well, anyway, she is Blake's ex, and she left him for Gunther. She had, like, a fling with Gunther after she broke up with Blake. But now she's gotten out of the business altogether, and now she throws erotic ceramic parties, sort of like Tupperware parties. Yeah.
Her name of her business is called Hey Clades, which is...
No, that wasn't what I was thinking of.
No, the show was called, that you were thinking about, Friends from College.
Friends from College, thank you. I knew it was something about, like, ex-classmates or something like
that. The name of her business where she... You know, teaches single people how to make potteries called Hey Clades.
Well, there you go.
Puns!
So that's why Blake's doing this, is because he still has feelings for Lisa, and he wants to eliminate the rival for her affections, or whatever, or prove himself, or... I don't know. It makes sense in his mind, I guess. So everybody then goes to Miami for the first part of their plan for the fake assassination. They're all assuming these other identities on the plane, and they're, of course, all outlandish type of things. They all look kind of absurd.
Right.
And I don't know. I was a little vague on their plan at this point.
Well, I mean, they wanted to use the fake hit to draw him out, so...
Right.
So then they found out that Gunther was going to take said job. So they figure out, well, once Gunther is there to kill the dude, that's when then they all strike and all pounce on him at the same time. I think that's as big as far as a plan went with. It's not a terrible plan.
Yeah. I think I just maybe would have enjoyed it more if I knew a little more about what their plan was or how it was supposed to work. Cause then, you know, it's kind of like a heist film. It's like, you know, the first half of a heist film is them planning out the heist. So when they're actually executing it and you see things go wrong with the plan, you can appreciate it. Cause you knew the way it was supposed to go. And I didn't really feel like I knew where it was supposed to go. So it's hard to appreciate how and when it's exactly is going wrong. You know,
I really think that's as far as it went. They were like, Gunther's going to kill this guy. When he's there killing the guy, we all surround him and we kill him. The end. Yeah. Okay. That's about it.
Okay. Fair enough. So, of course, it goes wrong. Gunther is hiding in the ceiling, and the guy with the bionic arm thing, he gets killed. And
right, because, the guy with the bionic arm. He's like fighting Gunther one on one. But like they established earlier in the movie, Izzet has this thing where his arm, because his arm is battery powered. But whenever it's low on batteries, his hand will do this thing where like kind of his hand will curl up into a fist, waiting for it to be powered back up again. So when he was fighting the guy hand to hand, Gunther had him, had him on the table, and he saw that his arm was like curling up to his fist because it was low powered. So he just took the arm and put it around Izzet's throat, causing his own arm to close up around his throat and kill him.
Yeah. So there's a lot of chasing Gunther around. We never get a clear look at Gunther ourselves, but they have some footage of the fight with Gunther and the documentary crew, and then when they pause it at a certain point, they see that Gunther looks exactly like Blake, and they realize that that's why no one knows what Gunther looks like, because he's a master of disguise and he can literally look like anybody.
Dun dun dun.
Yeah. So plot twist.
That's right.
So we have another attempt to take Gunther out. They track Gunther to this location, and they have Bobby Moynihan's character he rigs one particular car to explode.
Right, because I think because after they left that the first failed attempt, Sanaa says, "Oh yeah, I shot him. I definitely got him wherever he is." And then they found out that Gunther went to this particular doctor to get to get patched up. So then they followed him to that doctor, and they told Donnie to rig his car with explosives so it would blow up.
Yeah. Okay. And then that goes wrong where they're supposed to blow up a red car on the street, and this is a funny bit where every car except the red car blows up, and they blow up a ton of cars.
Yeah, like a dealership full of cars. Like it's all going up.
Yeah, and it's that must have eaten up a fair amount of this movie's budget, and it's also impressive in that this is all done in like one uninterrupted shot. So,
right, and then that's when they realize that Gunther knows we're here. Holy shit! Because like every car on the street, and it is impressive because like no other car goes down the street. It's just like a totally empty street, but every car on that street except for Gunther's car blows up.
Yeah. Yeah. And technically a very impressive thing because it's one of those movie things where it's like if it doesn't go just right, it's horribly wrong, and you've probably lost the day. So so lots of exploding cars, and let's see, like another assassin or two, they get killed. The puking guy, Pak Young, he gets killed.
Right,
like they track. Down to this one car, and they blow it up, and they think they've gotten Gunther in this car.
Right, right. Well, I mean, the Asian assassin, Young, he gets killed because they go up to the one car that hadn't been blown up, the red car that Donnie fit with explosives, and they're like, "How come this car didn't blow up? What the hell happened?" And then they hear like a hissing sound in the trunk. Young opens up the trunk, and he sees it's full of snakes. Like, you know, much like the snake that, you know, Gunther killed earlier, Mr. Slick, I believe his name was. And so one of the snakes just jumps out of the trunk, bites Young on the neck and kills him. Like, I think his last words were, "Oh, so that's what poison feels like. Oh, man, that sucks."
Yeah, yeah. I honestly wasn't too sorry to see this character go because I thought the gag of him puking whenever he saw a bit of blood got old pretty damn fast.
Yeah, I'll give you that. I mean, the fact that he only uses poison and he doesn't use his gun, that's a clever little, thing for him. It's like, he's like his own, like, little MacGyver where he doesn't use a gun. And, like, rather throw acid in people's faces than uses poison. That's like a quirky little thing to do, but yeah, there wasn't too much to his character.
Yeah, I think they just didn't develop him too much more because they knew he would only be around for a certain amount of time. So by the time he got killed, I was like, "Oh, okay, well, I'm good with that."
And scene.
Yeah. So anyway, the group, they think they've killed Gunther, so they, of course, they all go out to a bar and to celebrate, and they sing karaoke.
Yeah. This is one of my favorite scenes just because, you know, karaoke always just warms my heart. And there was a scene where Donnie was singing an old Sister Hazel song, All For You. And that,
yeah.
Look, whenever
it's
you...
Hard yeah, to say what it is. Seeing you, maybe I don't know all the lyrics.
I mean, look, if you put early 90s alt rock in a movie, you've already won my respect in that regard.
Yeah, you heard this song continuously in like the mid to late 90s on a continuous loop with Semi Charmed Life.
Oh, do 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 do.
Anyway, so everyone's celebrating, everyone's like bonding. Blake, he hooks up with the bartender at the bar, a very cute blonde. Donnie, Bobby Moynihan's character, he hooks up with Sana.
Yeah, because like Sana finds him. Yeah, because Sana finds him singing Sister Hazel like charming. I don't know. I don't know if I believe that. Like he, like Donnie was that charming, or I don't know. Maybe it's like because he's like a bigger dude, and it's like this very lovely woman is like, oh, this man is wooing me. I'm smitten.
Well, I mean, for whatever reason, she finds him charming, and they hook up. They go back to the hotel room together, and then we go. We pick it up again the next morning, and we hear all sorts of commotion in the hall. And Blake goes out into the hallway, and he finds Sana's father, Ramhat. He's going nuts that Donnie has hooked up with his daughter.
Defiled her.
Defiled her because he got a text from Blake, which Blake didn't actually send. And so this is how they figure out, oh no, Gunther is actually alive and he's setting us up. And they go into the hotel room that the assassin brother and sister were sharing, and they discover them both dead in the bed.
Right, like in a kind of compromising position. But for a brother and sister, it's kind of gross.
Yeah, yeah. The bodies are arranged so that her hand is like down the guy's pants, and I believe his hand was like on her chest, and it's just spray painted on the wall behind him is just ew,
because it is ew.
Yeah, because it's so they're found in an incestuous sort of body positioning thing.
Yeah. I mean, these two characters. I guess like how you felt about Young being killed off. Like, mm-hmm. I wasn't too upset about them getting killed off just because they didn't seem to do too much with their character, really. Because, like, I mean, they kind of established in the beginning of the movie that they're like a crazy, unstable, killing couple. And, like, mm-hmm. I really didn't see any of that in the movie. Like, I mean, their big thing was that they really loved American culture and they wanted to go to, like, Disneyland and stuff.
Right. Yeah. And the documentary crew had to break it to them that, like, Miami and Orlando were two different places and there was no Disney presence in Miami.
Yeah.
Because they're both wearing the Mickey Mouse ears.
Yeah,
when they get on the plane. I was sorry to see them go just because I know how ferociously talented Alison Tolman is from Fargo and other things I've seen him in. She was on Brooklyn Nine-Nine for an arc, and she was very funny on that. So I'm just always happy to see her pop up in things. I didn't know she was going to be in this movie, so I was like, hey, Alison Tolman. So I was sorry to see her character go, but
yeah,
mainly because Alison Tolman rather than the character was so great.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. All right. So so at this point now, the group is kind of disbanded because Donnie left because Sana's father is trying to kill him, and Sana left because she's trying to stop her father from killing Donnie. The brother and sister are gone, so now it's just Gabe and Blake. So like,
yeah, and Blake discovers that he has been ratted out to the FBI. So there's like a dragnet out for him, so he goes to stay with Gabe, the tech guy, played by Paul Pratan.
Right, he has an apartment in Brooklyn, I believe.
Yeah, yeah. And so... and that's awkward. Like, at one point, he's... Gabe is, like, hooking up with a young lady, and he's like, hey, Blake, I've got this thing going on. Could you, just give us a couple hours of privacy? And Blake's like, I'm a wanted man. The FBI is after me, and you want me to just go wander the city for a few hours? And he's like, yeah, well, could you?
I gotta seal this deal, man.
Yeah. Yeah, because priorities.
Yeah. Hey, we've all been there.
Exactly, exactly. So Blake, he goes out, and he actually meets with Donnie in the city, and Donnie says that he's in love with Sana, and... you know, he wants to make it work with her.
Yeah, I mean, I love how, like, when Donnie and Blake meet in the park, because Donnie's wearing a disguise. He's wearing, like, a wig and a dress, but, like, it's literally that's all he's doing. He's wearing a dress and a wig over his, like, baseball cap that he always wears in this movie. Like, he didn't even shave.
Yeah, he still has a beard, which Bobby Moynihan has throughout this movie. He has a beard throughout this movie. So he is a singularly unconvincing as a woman, because he is just the dark-haired Bobby Moynihan with a beard, with a blonde wig. So maybe from behind he could pass as a suburban mom. But when he turns around, not so much.
Not so much.
And Donnie also calls out Blake for still being hung up on Lisa. And he's like, you should go after Lisa. You should, you know, go make it work with her. And, and right. find her again.
Right. He's basically saying this whole thing has all been about Lisa, like, from the beginning. And he's not wrong.
Right, right. Yeah, it's kind of like in Ocean's 11, where Brad Pitt's like, hey, you, George Clooney, you're just doing this to get back with your ex-wife, Tess, played by Julia Roberts.
Very, that's, yeah.
That's why you're robbing all these casinos in one night.
That makes, and, yeah, wow, that's a good analogy, my friend. Well done.
Yeah, and, you know, not wrong.
Not wrong. Yeah. So then after this point, like, after I think Sanaa's father sees him, and then he runs after, he chases away Donnie, and then, of course, Sanaa's right behind her father chasing them. It's very Benny Hill at this point. It could have used some Yakety Sax. I'm not going
to
lie to you.
Yeah, yeah. Isn't it funny how Yakety Sax makes almost everything in the world funnier except Benny Hill?
Damn, yo. I mean, you're not wrong, but yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's a weird phenomenon of comedy. Like, you add Yakety Sax to most anything, it's instantly funnier, but the Benny Hill show, no.
I remember liking Benny Hill back in the day, but, like, upon reflection, I might have just, like, you know, boobs and Yakety Sax.
Yeah, I think those were the two main appeals of that show.
That's, yeah. You know,
I can't think of anything that Benny Hill has ever done where I'm like, oh, hey, he's really funny. What a comedic genius he is.
Yeah, I don't remember any of his jokes, but I do remember the boobs he had sex. So, like, oh, wow, I just had a revelation here.
Yeah, I think a friend of mine once told me that because it was on British television that, like, on the original versions of Benny Hill, they actually had nudity on the show, but we were seeing, like, the edited version on American television, so it wasn't as explicit.
Oh, man. Brits get all the cool stuff.
They got all the free nudity on their TV. They got to pay cable for that.
Yeah, they got The Who. They got, you know, Doctor Who. They got boobs. What don't they have? Jeez.
Yeah.
Oh.
But anyway, so back to the movie. About this time, Ashley, Blake's mentor, he gets out of the hospital, but he dies right after. And
it's a running gag. Like, anytime he gets out of the hospital, he goes right back into it. It's it's a pretty funny little thing to do.
You know, I found it, like, funnier in concept than in execution. I mean, guess because we never really get much of a sense of Ashley as a character. So
yeah, I see what you're saying.
It didn't work so great for me. But we have the funeral for Ashley. And Blake is there, and Donnie comes to the funeral, and he says, oh, Sanaa's pregnant, which kind of confused me because that seemed awfully quick because I was like, what, it's been maybe a week since they hooked up?
Donnie's got that super sperm. I don't know what to tell you.
I mean, because I'm like, don't you usually discover pregnancies somewhat later than that?
Donnie the potent man. Boom, boom. Boom, boom.
So, yeah. Yeah, the bombs aren't the only things exploding, if you know what I mean.
Oh, damn. Boom, shake the room.
But anyway, at the funeral, Ashley's casket gets bombed, and Gabe is killed under a toppling headstone. We just see a headstone flat on the ground with Gabe's legs poking out underneath.
Yeah, it's like when the house falls on the witch in the Wizard of Oz type of deal.
Yes, yes. Except they don't steal the shoes off of him. Or maybe they do, but it's just off screen. I don't know. Anyway, he's dead under a headstone.
Right. So at this point, Blake is totally distraught. Like, his mentor got blown to smithereens. His last member of his team was killed. There's, you know, Gunther has won. Like, he's bested him. Yeah.
So he goes back to Gabe's place, and he's getting drunk, and he's distraught, as you said. And just then, his ex-girlfriend Lisa comes to see him. So Colby Smulders at the door, and she gives him a card, and it's the card is Gunther's address. So he can finally track down Gunther and find out this man who's been causing all these problems for him, put the FBI on his trail, and killed off all of his friends and associates.
Right, right. And at the time, and also as he's gearing up to do it, he leaves a message for Donnie saying, hey, just to let you know, I found out where he is. I'm going yeah, I'm going with him by myself. If you want to come, come. You know, if I don't make it back, I love you. I love you, man. Type of thing. And he's a one man wrecking team at this point. He's a man with nothing to lose.
So Blake goes out to Gunther's house. He goes out to Mammoth Lakes, California, to a very nice house. The assassinating has gone well for Gunther. It's a growth industry.
Crime pays
in growth point blank. It's a growth industry.
Oh, nice.
Yeah,
I like that.
So we should do Gross Point Blank sometime.
I mean, it doesn't have any connection. I mean, Joan Cusack is in it, so
Dan Aykroyd.
Oh, you know,
could do it, my friend.
You know what?
We could do it.
I like the way you think.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Anyway, we'll get to Gross Point Blank someday because that's a fun movie.
That's a great one.
So there's this big shootout at Gunther's house, and it's kind of an impressive sequence. It's like shot all in night vision, so it's all in green, you know, with those low light cameras. And Donnie and Sama, they both show up because Donnie got Blake's message, and he's there to back up his friend, and they're fighting off, and it's Gunther is still unseen, but then. You know, finally they go into a room and they see footage of themselves from previous points in the movie. Like, so they've got the documentary footage there.
Right.
Like, what, how did this happen? How do you have footage of us? And he's like turning on the documentary crew and he's like, what's happening? What's going on?
Like, who do you work for?
Who do you work for? You know, so the double crosses and the mirrors are reflecting themselves and it's, we are through the looking glass, people.
Right. And so at this point, that's when the real Gunther, played by Arnold Schwarzenegger, comes in with his own documentary crew. Because apparently he found out that they were trying to kill him. So he made a documentary about their documentary.
Right.
Very meta.
A documentary about their documentary. And yeah, and Arnold Schwarzenegger finally shows up as Gunther 67 minutes into the movie.
I know.
Like an action-packed movie.
Yeah, two-thirds of the movie is over, and Arnold Schwarzenegger finally shows up.
Yes, yes. But they make the most of Arnold being there. So he welcomes them. He starts playing a gracious host. He makes them cappuccino.
Ooh.
And Gunther, we start seeing all the previous bits of the movie from Gunther's perspective. We find out what exactly Gunther was doing during the movie. And we see that at various points in the movie, Gunther was disguised as other characters that they had encountered.
Gunther was the arms dealer. Gunther was the girl bartender that Blake hooked up with, which, I mean, body-wise, that doesn't make any sense.
She is like a typical... She does not have the frame of a woman that Arnold Schwarzenegger could fit inside. This is not like the Total Recall thing where he's the heavy set woman on Mars who's like two weeks, and then her head opens up and explodes, and then, you know, and then there's a big melee and Arnold Schwarzenegger's killing people.
Wow, you just referenced two Schwarzenegger movies, like, in wow. All right, that's impressive.
I did. Well, I watched Total Recall. It was on one of the cable channels when I came home from work one day this week. So So I rewatched Total Recall recently, so it's fresh in my mind.
Oh, well done. And we also find out. Oh, also, so the two people that were in the car that they thought was Gunther and the doctor was actually Gunther's assistant and his driver, because, you know, when you're a big fancy assassin, you get an assistant.
Yeah, but I want to backtrack. I mean, it's just the funny thing is that Gunther was the blonde bartender that Blake hooked up with, and we actually see footage of that night. We see Blake passed out on his hotel bed, and we see the blonde actress who's, you know, just very attractive woman, you know, probably like 5'6" max, and then the camera pans away for a second, and then the camera pans back over, and we see Arnold Schwarzenegger in a black cocktail dress holding a blonde wig, because that was his flawless disguise, and he actually apparently had sex with Taron Gillam's character.
Got him!
So, I mean, if you've ever had the urge to see Arnold Schwarzenegger in a black cocktail dress, and... that is fine if you do. I am not here to kink shame anyone. The heart wants what the heart wants.
We don't yuck anyone's yum.
if you want to see that, if that is a thing that you want to see or even need to see, this is the movie for you. It's Killing Gunther, Arnold Schwarzenegger in a little black cocktail dress. So
hot.
That is now a thing that I have seen. That is now a thing that's in my head probably forever.
Yeah, you're welcome.
So Gunther explains to Blake, Donnie, and Samah, he's like, hey, I want my documentary to have a happy ending. Like, over all this back and forth, I become very fond of you, so I'm offering to just let everybody go and let bygones be bygones. And Donnie and Samah, they take him up on the offer because they've made a commitment to each other. They want to go make a life for themselves. So they leave, and now it's just Blake alone with Gunther.
Well, actually, also Blake, his camera crew leaves. Like, he tells them to go. So now, like, yeah, Everything after this is filmed with Gunther's camera crew.
Right. Yes, that is an important point to make. So it's just Blake and Gunther with Gunther's camera crew covering this. And then Gunther plays a trump card. He brings out Lisa, ex-girlfriend Lisa, played by Kobe Smulders. And it turns out, you know, he's like, okay, Blake, you can leave me alone. You can, you know, you can go and you can go live your life and have a happy life. But he's like, but if you kill me, I've given orders to my team to shoot Lisa if you kill me. So, So
paradox.
Blake's between a rock and a hard place here.
Yeah, what will he do?
So this erupts into a fight between Gunther and Blake. Gunther shoots Blake, and the two of them are fighting each other. But
I think that's all because Lisa at this point kind of wiggles herself free and kicks Gunther away and able to take out two of the cameramen.
Yeah,
like the cameraman get killed, and now there's like this big fight scene with just the cameras that are like left laying on the counter and on the floor.
Right. And she kicks the gun out of Gunther's hand. And so we have a fight scene between Gunther and Blake. Like, Lisa gets away, right? She runs off. Was that it?
Yes. Yes.
Okay. I didn't take that down in my note because it was, you know, lots happening very quickly. We have a fight scene between Taron Killam and Arnold Schwarzenegger. What everyone's been clamoring to see for all these years.
I mean, just going to
of action.
Just going to Reddit page. This is what everybody wants.
But I liked how this fight was covered. It was just with like the three stationary cameras. I think we just see three camera angles, and it's all like cameras that have been knocked down, but they're all like placed well enough that we can see the footage of the fight when it's cut together. So it was pretty cool. Yeah.
Yeah. And
go ahead.
Well, no. And as they're fighting, Arnold Schwarzenegger does get in like a few lines from his old movies. Like at one point, Gunther, who actually we find that Gunther's not even his real name, but, we find that Gunther.
What? What?
You didn't.
I am startled by this information.
Yeah. Like, Gunther was just a fake name. His real name was like Robert Bendick, which he mentions in the movie.
I feel so betrayed.
I don't know what to believe in anymore. So at one point Gunther is beating up Blake and he has Blake on the ground. He's like, oh, you want to kill me? I'm right here. Do it. Do it now. Kill me.
Yeah.
I'm right here.
Yeah. Yeah.
And if you're a Schwarzenegger aficionado, you recognize that line.
Yes. Do you know where that line is from?
I do, but I'll let you say it.
It was, if I remember correctly, it's from Predator, right?
Sure.
Yeah.
It's been a while to see Predator.
I am pretty sure that's from Predator, yeah, where he's like, you know, I'm right here, do it, kill me now.
Kill me now.
Right. Yeah. So it's Arnold having a little meta fun with himself.
Right. So as they're beating each other up, it looks like Blake is done for because like Gunther has to drop on him. But then they start hearing cop cars in the distance. Like they hear police sirens, and it looks like the cops are closing in on him. So like Gunther makes a break for it, and Taron's there, and he's like, "Oh, where'd he go? Where'd he go?" And he's like upset and frustrated, and just on the just super angry. And then he hears like a chopper going off in the distance, and he's like, "Ah, yeah." That's what he says. He says like, "Ah, he got to the chopper."
Yeah, yeah.
And then and that's it. Like, it's just Blake alone, no friends, no dead Gunther, no woman. He's failed.
Yeah, yeah. And then we cut to 1 year later. We got 1 year later, and then we're in Chicago, Illinois, and we catch up with Donnie and Sana. And the two of them have gotten married. Donnie converted to Islam to please her father, and they have a four-month-old baby daughter.
Right. And, and then they're saying they're happy now. They have a good life.
Very happy. They're out of the game. They're out of the business. They're all about the family life now.
Right. And then Donnie says, yeah, I haven't heard from Blake since that night. I don't know where he is. I got an invite to Lisa's wedding, and I thought they got married, but it turns out Lisa got married to some other guy.
Yeah, she got married to some dude named David.
Whatever.
Yeah, we never meet David officially. We just see him in photos. But David looks like a tool.
He's a total David. Ew, David.
Fuck you, David.
Jesus, wow, dude. Did somebody named David hurt you?
Or no, that's fine. Yeah, like I said, he just looks like a tool.
Okay.
I'm sure there are many fine, upstanding Davids out there.
Hashtag not all Davids.
Yes.
These are the Davids I know. These are the Davids I know.
And then we catch up with Gunther. Gunther has settled back into his native Austria. This is one of the few Arnold Schwarzenegger characters who's actually from Austria.
Yeah. Yeah, Schwarzenegger always plays like an American dude, and it's like,
yeah,
he's not. Okay, I'll go along with it.
Schwarzenegger, he usually plays like some dude from Montana or something, and he just has this unexplained Austrian accent. And because we're all used to Arnold Schwarzenegger speaking in his native Austrian accent, we all just roll with it. But yeah, this is one of the few movies that actually explains why he has an Austrian accent, because he is actually from Austria.
Right.
So he's in a nice house that looks exactly like his old house with, you know, because I'm sure they shot up the same place. We're constructing this house, and you know, if I'm out of the game now, but if I was going to kill somebody, this contractor would be the first guy I go after. Let me tell you.
Yeah. He's out of the game. He runs a garden co-op for retirees now.
And we also find out that he was the one who introduced Lisa to her new husband. And we see a little footage of Lisa's wedding to David. And they say, I do. And then they say like, oh, and thank you such and so for introducing us. And then the camera pans over to this older, heavyset black woman who just sort of winks at the camera. And that's presumably Gunther in disguise again.
He's very good at disguises.
Master of disguise. Master of disguise. Dana Carvey's got nothing on this guy.
Oh, wow.
I went deep.
That was a deep cut. I was not ready for that. Thank you, sir.
Yeah. So Gunther's in Austria. He's running the garden co-op for retirees. So we get to see Schwarzenegger and Lederhosen at one point, which is fun. And he's also rediscovered his love of country music.
Yeah, and then we hear of Gunther singing some country songs under. He has like another name he goes under, but it's like it's a very interesting way to go. It's a choice. It's definitely a choice.
Yeah. It is. It's a thing. Gunther completes his interview with the documentary crew, and then suddenly he's shot by Blake. He turns up, he reveals himself, and he's like all disheveled and bearded and stuff. And
he's gone off the deep end.
He's gone off the deep end because he's just been driven nuts by losing Lisa and all his friends and not killing Gunther. But he's now happy because he's finally killed Gunther, and then just he turns over the body, and then he discovers Gunther is wearing a bomb vest, which then explodes.
Yeah.
And it kills Blake and the camera crew.
Yeah, pretty much. And then that's it. Then it cuts to credits. And while the credits are going, it kind of cuts into some other footage of people finding the camera footage and wrecking. And then we get like a post-credit scene where it cuts to the police talking about, oh, this was the police giving a basic like a press conference about, oh yeah, this was like some gang turf wars We're, mm-hmm. you know, we're investigating, we're looking into it. Then one of the reporters asked, oh, I've heard that there was like footage, like leftover footage discovered at the scene. The police captain's like, well, we haven't given that information out yet, but we have found the camera, and that's all we can say right now. And of course, the camera pans to the reporter who asks the question, and of course, it's Gunther in disguise, you know, showing that he survived the explosion somehow.
Dun, dun, dun!
Killing Gunther too.
Plot twist.
That's right. Still killing.
Yeah.
And yeah, that's it. That's the movie.
That's the movie. What'd you think of this, Darren? How did this work for you?
Overall, I didn't think it was that bad. Like, I mean, I remember seeing reviews for it. I think it's like at 48% on Rotten Tomatoes, which is
yes,
not great.
No, not great. That is not certified fresh. The audience score, unfortunately, even worse, 28%.
Yeah.
I thought this was okay overall, but unfortunately it never really rose above the level of okay for me. It was amusing at times, but I don't think there were any real big belly laughs in it, you know?
Yeah, it came close a couple times. Like, it definitely wasn't as bad as I was expecting it. Because, like, I remember we did get a... When we said we were doing this movie, we did get a tweet from somebody saying, oh, yeah, I saw it. It wasn't great. So I was expecting some, you know, it's Pat level of terrible. But, like, it wasn't that. It was actually all right. I was like, oh, this is better than I thought of it. It wasn't quite, you know, great, but it wasn't terrible. Yeah. It's good. I thought, like, oh, it's okay.
Yeah, the movie, I would say, it didn't really come alive until Schwarzenegger came on. Let's see. We got a few critic reviews for Killing Gunther here. We got Frank Scheck from The Hollywood Reporter. Says, more than anything, Killing Gunther demonstrates that Christopher Guest has a lot to atone for with his pioneering of the mockumentary, which has become the lazy go-to style for low-budget comedies.
Ooh.
That's not good.
I don't know. I haven't seen... Have you seen that many? I mean, I guess you could say, like, The Office and Modern Family and Parks and Rec kind of use it, but...
Yeah, I mean, it's been very popularized, and I'm sure there have been a few movies that have been shot like that, although I can't really think of any at the moment. But, yeah, I mean, I think they were able to cover up a few budget deficiencies with the mockumentary style, because... And it can be an easy storytelling device, because you can have people just, like, talking directly to camera and explaining their motivations.
That's true. Yeah, I guess you're right.
So, I mean, yeah, it was okay. I wouldn't say it was ever really much beyond okay for me.
Right. Like, I mean, we've talked about movies that, like, we felt like are, you know, underrated and didn't get the love they deserved. Like, you know, MacGruber, rather, mm-hmm. and, you know, Walk Hard, the Dewey Cox story. Like, those are movies that were really good but didn't underperform. I would say this movie maybe, even though it did underperform, I guess, I think ultimately ended up making almost 200,000, and that was it, something like that. Uh-huh. But I would say, yeah, that seems about right.
Yeah, you know, it's fine. I wouldn't say it's more than fine. It's yeah, it's fine. I hate to say it, but yeah, this is a skippable movie, I would say.
Yeah, it did reignite my love for that Sister Hazel song. But
sure.
Other than that, yeah, it's just like, you don't need to see it. But it's a good okay movie. Like, oh, that was all right.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And, you know, there are lots of people I like in it. I like Taron Killam. I like Colby Smulders. I like Bobby Moynihan more often than not. I like Hannah Simone. And Arnold's fun. And Arnold's always up for having fun with himself. So,
yeah, he really hams it up in this movie. He's a big old goof.
Yeah, they do make the most of the limited screen time that Schwarzenegger has. I feel like it probably would have been a better movie if we'd had, like, Schwarzenegger throughout, and then we could have had a more, you know, more of them going up against each other. The first two-thirds of the movie are just kind of the hapless assassins flailing around, and it gets a little old after a while.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I sort of understand why they did that, just to make it... To make you know, Gunther like this big, like, unknowing figure, like, sort of create the mystique of what he looks like and who he is. But I mean, at the same time, you know, Schwarzenegger's on the movie poster, and he's in the trailers and commercials and he's prominent pretty well. We all know what he looks like, so just maybe put him in a little early. It seems like the mystique is already kind of gone.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, but, you know, if you have a big star like Arnold Schwarzenegger in a new movie, of course you're going to put him in all the advertising as much as possible. So, yeah, yeah, it does seem that, you know, why play coy at that point? So,
yeah. I mean, do you think it would have been a smarter move if they didn't put him in and then just had it as like a surprise for people who watched it? Be like, oh, shit. I mean,
yeah, that would have been great if we'd done like a Bill Murray in Zombieland type of thing or something like that.
Oh, that was fantastic. Or like, I don't know if you saw the movie, the Ali Wong movie, Call Me...
Always Be My Maybe.
Always Be My Maybe. And then they had like Keanu Reeves in it. And like, spoiler. But like, that was like a nice little surprise.
Right, right. I remember a lot of buzz about that. Yeah, it's fun, but what are you going to do? Schwarzenegger is such a big star that anything he does is going to be reported on. So I don't know if it would have been practical to keep his appearance a secret. And it says on the IMDb trivia page that Schwarzenegger's appearance in the film cost 20% of the film's budget. So
I believe it.
Arnold got his payday. He got, I'm rubbing my fingers together right now. Arnold got paid.
Show me the money.
So, interestingly, it says in an interview on Conan, Taron Killam revealed that the role of Gunther was offered to both Tom Hanks and Bruce Willis before Arnold Schwarzenegger was cast.
Tom Hanks,
can you imagine that?
I mean, he has played an assassin before, like Road to Perdition, which is an underrated movie. I really like that movie.
Yeah.
But maybe that would have worked. I mean, he does have comedy chops.
Yeah. Of course, yeah. Cool. I would like to have seen the version of this movie with Tom Hanks. I don't know if it would have been better or worse, but it would have been interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh. Interesting choices. So. All right. Mm-hmm. And yeah, so that's our movie, guys. Killing Gunther.
Killing Gunther.
We're not saying not to watch it. We're not saying run out to watch it. It's like, sure.
It's there. It's a thing that exists. Yeah. It's, you know, it's on Netflix streaming.
That's our hot take.
Yeah. It's, I mean, was it worth losing Taron Killam on SNL over? Yeah, probably not.
Yeah, no, definitely not. I mean, I guess that's another thing people are saying too, where like, people saying, oh, like, if he allegedly did get fired because of this movie, you know, that sucks because it seems like they're letting Pete Davidson do whatever he wants and work on King of Staten Island and Suicide Squad and the like.
Well, I mean, you know, in retrospect, maybe Taron Killam just should have had a drug problem.
Jesus Christ! we here at the SNL Nerds do not condone or...
Show me where I'm wrong.
I'm not going to co-sign that.
Okay. I'm just joking, folks. I'm just joking.
I kid.
And I don't mean to make light of real life drug problems or anything like that. So
maybe you should have gotten Crohn's disease. That's a little bit better.
There you go. Yeah. There you go.
There it is. All right, yeah, so that's our episode, guys. It's that ended on a high note. I didn't expect it to go that way.
It did. So anyway.
Maybe we'll talk about the next movie we're going to talk about on a 4th of July weekend.
It's the 4th of July weekend next weekend. So we decided we want to be patriotic. We need to be patriotic. Because, I mean, we're Americans. Because we got thrown out of every other decent country in the world. And we want to celebrate that. And what better way to celebrate it than with probably the most patriotic movie starring an SNL alum, Bill Murray's Stripes.
That's right, Stripes. If a comedy came out in 1981, I'm sure there'll be nothing problematic about it at all.
No. It's totally okay.
Yep.
It's uh, It's all good. As far as I can remember, I don't think anyone is in blackface in it. So I think we're good. I don't think it's going to be canceled between this week and next, but who knows?
Well, let's find out together.
Let's find out. Let's find out the gags from that worked in like 1982-ish that don't work so well today.
Yeah, it'll be fun.
It'll be fun. And then we can like look at them from our modern day perspective and be like, oh, well, that's not so good anymore.
Oh, I mean, I got one scene in mind that I'm like, oh, that could not, that does not fly today.
Okay, yeah, well, we'll find out what that is next week with Bill Murray, Harold Ramis, John Candy, Judge Reinhold, John Larroquette, Ivan Reitman directing. I mean, it's Stripes. What more do you want,
people? It's Stripes, people. It's Stripes. And yeah, so that's our podcast, people. And as always, you can follow us on Twitter at SNL Nerds Show. You can donate to our Patreon at non-productive.com.
You can also check out the other podcasts on the Non-Productive Network. And you can follow us individually on Twitter and Instagram. I'm at Trumbull Comic, T-R-U-M-B-U-L-L, and the word comic.
And I'm at Darren Credible, that's D-A-R-I-N Credible, Twitter and Instagram.
Yeah. And you can, again, follow us at SNL Nerd Show on Twitter, where you can just keep abreast of all of our goings on.
You said breath.
I did.
Oh, man. What have we turned into?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. What have I become?
What have I done?
Anyway, but that'll be next week when we're back with Stripes. And anything else to say before we sign off, Darren?
Nah.
Do we have any new feedback or anything? I haven't even looked. Let me look.
Sure.
Nope, no new ratings and reviews. So please give us a rating and a review on the Apple Podcasts. We thrive on that.
It's our lifeblood.
Yes, it's what we like to hear. We like to hear what people think, because otherwise we're doing this in a void, and what fun is that?
That's right. None at all.
None. But that's it for this week, guys. So thank you for listening, as always. And until next week,
Nerds out.
This has been a Non-Productive Media presentation. Executive producer, Frank Hablawi. This program and many others like it on the Non-Productive Network is distributed under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives license. Please share it, but ask before trying to change it or sell it. For more information, visit non-productive.com.